Welcome back to another episode of the Rough Cut Club. I am your host, Joey Nicotra, here with my incredible co-host, Mr. Shane Reitzammer, where we talk all things art and business, except today we have a very special episode that we are breaking up into two parts, where we pulled our Cinema Story Family Company and asked them to anonymously ask us any questions that they may have buried deep, deep, deep down in their closet. And this was a really fun episode. I got to learn a little bit more about Shane, and Shane got to learn a little bit more about Joey.
Man, I love this episode. And if you want to hear Joey Nicotra drop some bars, you got to stick around for these episodes because, man, I had such a great time, learned a lot, and you don't want to miss it.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those special episodes that I did not wake up this morning and think I was going to be rapping on the podcast. But, you know, crazier things have happened and God works in mysterious ways. So this was a good episode, man.
Let's get it.
All right, man. Question number one.
Uh-oh. I'm sweating.
What is the lore behind your 10,000 dogs at home?
You know, it's funny because we had to ask before this episode started what lore even meant, and Joey didn't know what lore meant either. And I felt so connected to Joey in that moment.
It's true. He
explains everything to me. And Bella is in the studio right now. She runs our podcast. She's the producer for the Rough Cut Club, and she had to explain lore. So I'll give you the tea or the backstory.
There we go.
To the 10,000 dogs. So yeah, my wife and I are animal enthusiasts. My dad, before he passed, or when his entire life, he was a veterinarian. So I grew up with a bunch of animals. My wife, she had like three dogs, three cats, had a lot of animals. So we get married and we're like, oh, we're going to have a couple of pets. That's fine. So we started rescuing animals. So we rescued our first one, whose name is Luca. She's a mama's girl. And we, you know, then there's like, oh, but Luca needs a friend, right? Don't let your wives tell you this. Oh,
you don't drink the Kool-Aid.
You got to get everything in pairs, right? So they need a buddy. So then we got Remy was next. And then I think we... I don't know what happened with a third. Then it just became an
addiction. Spiraled out of control.
Yeah. I was bad at saying no, you know? And so then there was a third and now there's a fourth. And so we have four dogs. She already had two cats, of her own. And so we have four dogs, two cats. And, yeah. And now we say, now that you have kids and we have two kids now, and we go, oh, we get it. That's why you only have like one or two dogs because, bro, it's a lot. It's a little zoo going on at the house.
So there's a part two to this question, and it's what's up with the chicken farm?
Yeah.
Also, can I have eggs?
Yeah, bro, I should have brought you. I have so many
eggs.
No,
that's what they asked.
Oh,
they
can
want
they
some
have
of your eggs. Like, are
oh.
your eggs like available for
okay,
other people?
Okay, I was Joey's egg plug all last year.
I am a big fan of eggs, and I'm still consider you my egg plug.
Okay, all right. And yes, everybody can have eggs. Right now, we're egg rich. So the tea behind that is, you know, we moved out of the country. We are adapting to the farm life. And like, dude, I want goats. My wife wants a mini cow. I'm like, what? So we can make sliders?
Oh
no,
gosh.
I want a like full size burger, please. Yeah. So she's like, no, they're pets, right? Yeah, but you know, chickens are awesome. They're messy, but they add value, right? They're popping out these little golden butt nuggets, as we call them.
Oh my God.
every day, man, one butt nugget deposit for you. And you got these eggs, and man, they're so much better than the store bought. But you know, maintenance, pretty low maintenance. You got to feed them, you got to clean their coop. But yeah, that's the tea. And yes, you can have eggs.
That is
I'm your plug.
That's pretty good, man. I'm not going to lie. Shane's eggs got it going on.
Yeah. All right. All right. This is for Joey. Joey, what's up with your family connection to the mafia?
This is a very real thing. My great, great grandfather was actually killed by the mob. And we, yeah, thrown off of a building. And supposedly... The story goes that The Godfather was written, you know, about like a true crime family like narrative, but the names of the families were replaced for the family's protection. And supposedly one of my family members was a character in the movie The Godfather, but renamed something different. And unfortunately, my great grandparents passed before I could dive like too deep into this information. But my great great grand or my great grandfather remembered after that happened and his dad was killed, that this like black car like pulls up to the house and these dudes get out exactly like you would expect them to, and they go in and they supposedly tried to talk to my great grandfather about like joining the family. And supposedly like his godfather was actually the godfather at that time, something to that effect. And basically my great grandfather was so like broken that he had just lost his dad that he was like, no, screw you guys, I don't want to do this. And that's when like our mob ties ended at my great grandfather, but literally like it stopped with him because his dad was killed.
Oh my gosh, how crazy is this? Joey Nicotra, the DP, the skateboarder, probably would have never existed if he had said no, because you probably would be in the mob right now in New York somewhere, or Vegas.
That's where my whole family's from. We're all from New York. And so my dad grew up in Long Island. And the only reason I'm in Texas is because my dad made the jump to move here right when he graduated high school. And other than that, I'd be in New York right now, bro.
That's insane. I'm going to have to start calling Joey the wise guy.
The wise guy. You'd be sleeping with the fishes.
Oh, that's too good. I see a movie coming out.
Oh, right? I love it. Okay. Ooh, this is actually a really good question. How do you both of us feel about musical movies?
You go first.
Okay. I'm glad because I'm not going to lie. Lately, I have really been getting into musical movies, and I'm kind of on a musical kick right now. And it's really, I think, become one of my new like cinema goals to film my own version of them. But my wife actually got me into them, because for the longest time I was like, you know, it's like country music. Like, you just don't like it until you get into it and then you love it. But then once you start watching musicals, I'm like, man, especially when it's music that you really enjoy already. And then you watch movies that you're like, dude, this is just so entertaining and so good, and most of the time super wholesome, or if it's Boz, it's a tragedy. But it's like, I've really been appreciating in this last year the art form of musical movies more than I ever have before, and it's now one of my goals to film one of those in my career.
Yo, I think we have another idea for a short film, like, concept, dude, we need to do.
Oh, I would love it. Well, honestly, because like, you know, most people that have been listening to this know I love music videos. Music videos or musicals are the blend of music videos and narrative feature filmmaking. And it's like, you get to film, you know, 10 music videos in one narrative and weave in this amazing story throughout it and do these creative cuts and these creative worlds. And it's like, the more I thought about it, I was like, I'm literally meant to make musicals. Like, that is what I'm meant to do.
Yeah, I'd see that.
It's music videos and narrative filmmaking coming together in the most beautiful way. And I love
having
musicals.
A love child. And
musicals. Love musicals. Yeah. What about you?
Man, so I...
I hate them.
Right? I absolutely hate them. We're not making them. No, I actually grew up watching musicals, man. So my household was pretty conservative growing up. So we watched a lot of like classic, like old, Andy Griffith Show, all that stuff. And then musicals. So we would watch, you know, like Singing in the Rain and, you know, anything with, Fred Astaire, you know, like classic. All of these, you know, tap dances, musical numbers, pieces. And so I would say I'm sick of musicals because I grew up watching them, but there's also like this like place in my heart because it's like, memorable to me. It reminds me of my childhood, right? Nostalgic.
Yeah.
And so I haven't watched as many modern day musicals. I'm guilty.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if I could really say
yeah.
the last modern musical that I've watched. So I'll put that on my list. What's the app?
Letterboxd.
Letterboxd.
You got to get Letterboxd. It helps
me. Hit me with some.
I got you, bro.
Hit me with the top three that I need to go watch. I'll start doing it.
Okay.
I love them. I do. Yeah. Because it is a different way to express cinema and yeah. art together. And I love how you said it. It's like blending music videos and narrative storytelling together. So I could see it being a lot of fun.
Dude, I feel like I would just have the most fun in filmmaking if I was making a musical.
Will you tap dance in it?
Absolutely. Okay. Honestly, I would love to cameo in movies. Yeah. I will go full blown. What's the actor that's in all of his movies with the crazy last name? M. Night Shyamalan.
There you go.
Dude, I will go full M. Night in a musical. Absolutely.
Nice. I yeah, love it.
Definitely. What's funny is we literally just talked about a musical at lunch right before this podcast.
That's true.
And I was like, I watched one this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm all about them.
Timely question.
All about them.
All right. Here's the next one. How do you guys really feel about bad production gigs or crew members? How do you guys really feel about bad production gigs or crew members? Like bad crew members, I guess, too? Okay.
Yeah, bad productions and bad crews. Well, the more of them that I do, the more that I continually strategize on how I don't have to get back in those predicaments again. Mm. And so, you know, working with new crew is kind of a part of the process and what we do a lot of the times. And working with new clients that just the productions aren't that great. But I think the more experience that you get doing them, the more infrequent that they become, because you learn how to avoid the clients or the productions that have red flags all around them before you even get to set.
Yeah, that's good. See, I'm a fix it kind of person, solution driven. So for me, like, a bad production needs to be fixed, right? How can I educate the client? How can I make this situation better for us? Right. Or let's pass on it type thing.
Right.
So like, and I don't freelance out, so I don't really know about working on other bad productions. I love it and hate it for you guys. But when y'all tell me like, dude, I worked on this project and it made me really realize how much I appreciate some of the things we do at CinemaStory and the why we do it. Cause sometimes it's like, all right, are we information overload, you know, for our team and stuff? But no, our people enjoy that. We're very thought out and logistical, and we try to over communicate to solve a lot of the problems in pre, so that production is fun. And it's like, it's not heavy laden with some of those bad things. As far as bad crew members, because I would say, yeah, new you're always going to run into, but bad, like if you could really tell if this person's bad, like for me, it's bad isn't, it isn't inexperience. It isn't being new. Bad is a bad cultural fit, right? Like your work ethic or your values don't align with the rest of our team and what we stand for. So, you know, you're sitting around on set, you got a bad attitude, you are always complaining, you're stabbing people in the back, whatever that is, right? That doesn't align. Then yeah, like if I can identify that person, I quickly will remove them from my group of circle of contractors and team members that we have, because one bad apple can definitely spoil the bunch. And you also have to make, as a business owner, you have to make rules and regulations to manage one person that then affects everybody else.
Right.
Right. So if you got problem or troublemakers, it's like, you know, try to fix, again, I'm going to try to fix the problem. Can I help, you know, guide you in a different way that aligns with our values and our work ethic? And if I can't, then I'm going to excommunicate you pretty quick.
Couldn't have said it better myself. These are really great questions. What are some of your onset icks? Man, that's good. That is good.
I'll just say them as they come to me.
This is tough. We're gonna have to edit out this.
We have really good set. I would say one onset ick.
I think I got one. I'm trying to remember how it goes, though. Shane has this format that he loves to do during interviews where where we have the guests say, thank you, thank you, thank you, in three different inflections.
it does feel very ick.
It feels icky.
Yeah. That's you. Only for certain types of videos.
Absolutely. Very I'm just dogging clients. On you, but it's...
We don't do that on every set.
Absolutely. But I feel myself in the seat just being like,
Oh, I know an on-set ick. When something from our crew falls in front of our client. Big onset ick.
Massive ick.
Oops, forgot to put a sandbag on that. And boom, like, even when you put sandbag, we were doing a project and we had a celebrity on site. We had a client on site. We had built out these flags and, you know, overheads. And the dang winds, like, hurricane. And we probably should, you know, we quickly remedied the situation, put some bodies on the stands. But those things are falling over, almost took out like some of our clients. It's just like major ick. Like for me as a director and producer to client liaison, I'm just over there like feeling as big as an ant, you know, like, hey, glad everything's good. Everybody's okay. Now let me continue to try to guide this production and not feel like amateur hour. You know, again, out of our control, but we totally. Probably could have been a little more thoughtful on that. Big ick.
I'm trying to think if safety. I'm trying to think if there's any others, because I know that there are others.
Yeah, we might have to circle back to this one.
Is there an ick that I have, like, that I do on set that you're like, gosh, I hate when he does that?
I'm thinking, oh, let's get brutal here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is a good one. Now, this is more just a personal. This is the way you can tick me off, is not communicating on set, right? So, like, if we're like, I'm like, hey, we got 1 hour, we got 30 minutes. A lot of times, I'll be kind of doing the AD role on some of these things, and then I'm like, hey, let me know when y'all are ready. Right. And then I'll come check in and I'll be like, okay, because I'm like, okay, it's like 5 minutes before I told them like we need to be. So I'm like, hey, how are we doing? And you go, waiting on the director. We're just waiting on the director, everybody. And the client, everybody's there. And I'm like, bro, are you serious? And I'm just like, all right, cool. And let's go ahead and roll camera, roll sound. Which you haven't done in a really long time.
I feel like I've said camera set on the project, and you were mid conversation and didn't hear it. And
he's
I
like
let
this.
You
he goes,
continue
he goes like
on.
This. Camera set. Camera's ready. Waiting on you.
I don't want to interrupt you when you're talking to the client, man.
Bro, I'm just blowing hot air most of the time. I'm useless on set. I'm just waiting for somebody to say we're ready to go.
So good, man.
All right, what about me? I mean, you already said my thank yous.
And it's not even you. It's like the format of the video that's like, oh, we're doing like a gala video. And it's like, we got to thank the donors. And it's like.
I know another ick. It's happening recently, too. It's like I'm so tired of using my same old, like, I don't have time to do any B-roll, so let's get really creative and have you step off camera and like walk in and sit down in the chair.
Yeah.
And for the client, it's fine. They like, oh, yeah, this is cool. This is what they do in documentaries. But everybody on set, I feel like we all have a major ick of like, we do this every time and we haven't used this since 2021 in our videos. And sometimes you need it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it makes sense.
This is another one that, and it doesn't happen often. I've only seen it happen a couple of times. And sometimes it's, I don't know. I've had sound guys before that were inexperienced at lobbing somebody up. And they and they go and they lob them up and they don't know how to like lob somebody's specific outfit up. And they just like, I'm like, all right, let me step in and help you like figure this out. Or let me redo what you did. And I know that that client is just like having two dudes just digging in their clothes about like how to put a mic on them. And I'm like, you know, we all like this is just part of it. But
yeah, that's a good one. Or when it's a woman and she's like in her dress or something, oh, and the sound guy's like, they're like, can we just boom them? I'm like, no, get the lapel on them. Figure it out.
Are you wearing a bra today, ma'am?
Oh, it's so fun.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay.
Dude, all right, one last one now that I think about it. This is an internal ick that probably nobody else knows, but I have to fight with it because I like, so sometimes in interviews, when I'm interviewing people and I'm trying to like really, so I'm like, I give like the nod and like, you know, I'm really expressing, I'm trying to like help them feel comfortable. Yeah. And I'm like, and then people have said this when like from the outside, they're like, oh, Adiel, one of our ACs is like, dude, you're just over there doing this the whole time. Yeah. And you're like, you're really into it. And I'm like, dude, I'm trying to give them positive encouragement.
Bro, I got to be honest. On all the other projects that I DP, none of the other directors positively reaffirm the guest as much as you do. You got it going on when you positively affirm them.
Okay, and then I got to get transparent. Sometimes when I zone out and I forget what they're talking about, and I'm just still like nodding. I'm like, I wonder what's
thinking about all those dogs and those chickens you got at home. Okay, last one. I'll make it quick. If I am doing DIT at the end of the shoot and somebody hands me a card and there's other footage on it,
major ick.
Format good. That mugger. I don't even know if that's a word, mugger. I was going to say mug and bugger, and then it came out mugger.
Oh, I got a write in. Okay. Joey, what are some of your must-haves for a DP kit? Oh, this is good.
And a DP kit, that's good. Well, the proper answer is a light meter, but it's in this day and age, oftentimes I don't have the time. I don't have as much time to use one as I would like. But you know, must-haves, that's good.
Camera?
Yeah, you got to have a camera. You got to have lenses. Dude, so many people make the mistake of not having the proper ND filters.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I've done shoots and maybe people are used to having like built-in NDs or something, and like they don't have ND filters or the proper ones, and it's a must.
That's another ick. Shooter shows up and they're like, oh, I don't have any ND for this.
Yes,
like,
major ick. Major ick. Definitely not a fan of that. I'm trying to think of, read the question again. It's a must have in the DP kit.
What are some of your must haves for a DP kit?
When I'm shooting on set, this is a personal preference thing. I really like having the ability to hardwire power into my camera. Because so often, I mean, an AC can help out with thinking through batteries, but I've had like, especially when they're reading as like a voltage percentage or a voltage reading instead of like a percentage, it's very easy for me to accidentally let my camera die when it shouldn't. And so for me, having the ability to hardwire power in is one that it's like one less thing that I'm having to like think about. A great monitor is also really helpful. So oftentimes, like we've had Video Village monitors and whatnot. Like if I'm watching somebody else operate on, making sure like you have a good quality monitor to where you can actually point out things and it's not like so small. It's like
everybody's huddled over the viewfinder.
So like a good monitor is really helpful. And
yeah, I think the power thing is a big. That's a big thing too.
It's one thing I just like to not think about while I'm there.
Yeah, you can totally. I feel like anything that helps you just totally focus in on the creative and be in that creative zone, like that's where I know I can get, you know, the most value from you as the DP, because you're just like you're in that zone and you're thinking through, you know, what is the camera trying to communicate here? Yeah. The lighting, how is that reading? How is the skin tones look and all that stuff? But when you're, you don't have to worry about like, oh, my battery died in the middle of that shot. And now we got to redo that whole take. Right. And so it's just like taking off that pressure.
It's just one less thing to think about. Yeah. I would say I'm trying not to leave like or include any lights and stuff like that in it, because technically that's like G&E's kit and not my kit.
Sure, yeah.
But there are some go-to lighting tools that I use on all of my stuff, but
yeah, it's good.
Anyway.
Oh wait, yeah, I think
Shane, this is good. Do not read any further.
I read it already.
I've always wanted to know more about your homeschooling journey.
Man, who wrote that one? You know, we got another homeschooler in the company now, Will.
Will, shout out to Will.
Let's go, homeschoolers.
We only have two.
Is there any other closet homeschoolers out there in our team?
I don't know. I know we have two confirmed.
I was back when homeschooling was illegal, so it was cool back then, okay? In the 90s when my mom would be like, "Hey, watch out for the truant officer. Like, don't go play outside in the front yard." Go play in the backyard because all the other kids are in school right now.
My gosh. That is awesome.
So I actually was homeschooled my whole life. Started, you know.
You never went to public school one day.
You know, I went into public school to play a chess tournament or two.
You're lying.
Go play like select sports.
You were in the homeschool chess club.
No, I went to public school to go play chess. That's what I'm saying. I went to, it was like community, you know, whatever.
Okay,
so.
Okay. I thought you just competed there. That's cool.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was all. I don't know. Mom, was it all homeschoolers? Man, I loved it though. Like, so I remember growing up thinking, you know, is this weird? Is this different? Like,
yeah.
But I grew up in Houston. There was a huge community of homeschoolers, even though it was the early days.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like this weird, like, you know, should this be legal? Is it, you know, can we allow people to educate their children at home type thing? But man, I developed so many good close relationships because they have to be with you. You know, you got 10 people to choose from. You gotta pick your friends close. No,
yeah.
I'm kidding. There was, you know, over hundreds of kids that we got to socialize with.
So you were in like a co-op program, right?
Yeah. So there was definitely co-ops that, like, we would actually go do like kind of group classes too on, I think it was Tuesdays. I was actually part of a production, a choir and like performing like theatrical troupe called Joyful Sound.
Nice.
Every Tuesday we would get together, and that was one of the best days because, bro, there was girls there. there was other bros to hang out with. And so,
and there were girls there.
There were girls. Yeah. And so, no, it was awesome, man. And
that's cool.
Some of my best friends growing up, I met them through that.
Yeah.
And I think part of the creative, my love of music and performing arts and visual arts, some of that was nurtured through that organization called Joyful Sound, started by Paula Spencer, who is the mother of one of my best friends, Lane Spencer. And so that was a great time. Met a lot of great buddies. Didn't really know any different. I mean, even through high school and stuff, I was like, this is what it is. We still played a lot of sports. Again, it was like, you know, select, you know, sport team or community sport teams.
Yeah.
Looking back, I always wonder, could I have been the next John McEnroe? You know, could I have been, you know, Johnny Manziel football, right? Probably no to all of those questions.
But Shane is an amazing disc golfer. You do have extraordinary talent in disc golf.
I'll bring the heat. Man, I played tennis. I played baseball. I didn't play any football.
Closet
I played basketball.
Athlete, bro.
Played a lot of sports, man. But I always go, what was it like to be on a team, like a school team, and then also have the opportunity to potentially get picked up and looked at. So my nephew now, he was homeschooled as well. I think he's done some private and some homeschooling, but it's different now. Like they have opportunities to play on, you know, sports teams that are getting looked at, you know, by the minor leagues and by colleges and stuff. And so even at his age of like 12, I was like, what? They're already like scouting and like know who people are. It's crazy. So
do you think that you're going to homeschool your daughters?
That's a good question, man. We've talked about it. We still got a couple of years to figure it out. I think we're leaning more towards like private school or some sort of hybrid. Or, you know, if I can be like Elon Musk one day and just create my own school for my kids,
there
right?
You
handpick the teachers and handpick the curriculum. I do enjoy, I think... specialized education is very interesting. And so I think with homeschooling, obviously, you know, there are state regulations that, you know, things that you have to learn and stuff, even in that format. But I think there's a way for you to specialize in things.
Yeah.
When the timing is right for that kid, if they know kind of a direction that they want to explore, even, right? You don't have to know everything, but explore it. So, yeah, man, that's the journey.
There you go, man. And Sydney was homeschooled for a little bit too.
Yeah, that's right. High school, right?
Till eighth grade. But it was co-op, and so
yeah.
Wild, man.
Well, let me last thing on homeschooling. I was in the era where homeschooling was, like I said, almost illegal and like, I'll say cool, but really it was really when everybody was wearing the high water, like you could tell, you could spot a homeschooler a mile away. Yep. You were like, that kid's homeschooled by their outfit.
They're radiating homeschool energy.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, when you met me, did you automatically know this kid's homeschooled?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You did pretty. You're no longer a recovering homeschooler. You have fully recovered.
I gotta work on my.
You gotta bring back the high waters, bro.
Oh, I might be under the table right now.
So good.
It's laundry day. That's awesome. Oh, that was good. That made me blush. All right. Joey. Oh, I got one for you, buddy.
Okay.
Another ride in.
Okay.
Did you ever have to explain the importance of DPs to a client before? The importance of a DP to a client.
There have been some clients that didn't fully know all that went into being a DP. Even recently, like, you know, a lot of them think you throw up a camera and just use the natural light if you're outside, and, you know, some of these things that they're not really aware of what all goes into what I do. And so sometimes I have had clients that I've had to educate on, like, how important the nuance of what I do is. But most people, there's a lot of clients that don't know the difference between, like, a videographer and a DP. Mm. And there have been clients that...
What's the difference?
Well, I would argue that run and gun filmmaking is videography, and having leadership in a team and really really working with a team of hyper specialized people to, you know, do their function and light and create cinematic images at a higher level. I mean, it's probably a bad definition of it. I need to work on my, like, elevator pitch of a definition. But I think the biggest thing in being a DP is you're leading a team of people most of the time to create higher quality images than you could get if you were just doing running, like, really, really good run and gun filmmaking.
Yeah, that's good. So, no, that's, I ask because I have to educate, like, brides, clients for when we do our wedding films. And so I always say, we have cinematographers. We don't have videographers. And the difference is videographers, they're great. They're capturing the moment pretty much how it is and how it's presented. Right. But a cinematographer is using light and framing and storytelling, sequencing to create our images, right?
Totally.
But I love what you added too on that. You pretty much said that with the lighting and stuff, because I think lighting really comes in and makes you a cinematographer. Although videographers, yes, you throw on a
lighting,
light panel,
camera movement,
whitewash, face. But the leadership thing, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge, actually, because you're not only leading the camera team, but you're really communicating the, you know, lighting department, you're interacting with art department.
You're the liaison with the director that's helping, you know, bring certain story elements that are important to the narrative to life.
Yeah.
And giving, you know, meaning to their story with how you move the camera, how you light the image, and, you know, all of that as well.
And that's why that's my elevator pitch, my sales pitch to brides, is that we hire and or train our filmmakers to be cinematographers, not just videographers.
Yeah.
We want to shape the environment and not just capture the environment.
Right.
So, yeah.
Dig it, man.
That's good. All right, Joey, this one's for you. Talk about your passion Talk about a passion you have that you don't know about yet, or that's or that we don't know about yet, or that's unrelated to filmmaking. Oh yeah.
Well, some people know this, but I am passionate about real estate too. Mm. I'm also passionate about cryptocurrency, so I'm kind of in the crypto game, or at least was until
big spike. Yeah, big spike. When this podcast airs.
Yeah, but I do dabble in crypto. I dabble in real estate investing and stuff like that, and I flipped a couple of houses. But I will be honest, this is not come out on the pod yet, but I have recently been trying to figure out a way to reconfigure my life in a way that allows me to go snowboarding more. I know this sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy,
yeah,
but I, you know, there's some people out of the year that get to snowboard, you know, several weeks or several months out of the year. And I'm like, man, if I could just change my life up a little bit, I would be up in the slopes and on the mountain more than I currently am living in Dallas, Texas.
Don't break any more wrists, bro.
I'm just at a point where
hey, you got to get it in now.
My body's only getting older.
You got to do it. Dude, snowboarding was my favorite. I would go every year. Such a great time with friends, with the boys, with loved ones, and then just, man, it's the action sport,
yeah, man.
But with like this beautiful like adventure aspect to it,
yeah,
as well.
I'm trying to do more things that make me really feel alive that are like unrelated to business right now. And I'm like, I still love skateboarding, but snowboarding is something that I didn't grow up around, that I'm like, it's like its cousin, you know. I feel like I would love surfing if I got a chance to live near the ocean, but snowboarding, man, I'm like really kind of like, how can I move to Colorado for like 3 months of the year and still keep all my business contacts here? What about
you,
man?
AI, that's when AI is making the videos for you.
Yeah,
you just got to shoot it once and let AI roll out all your content.
True. What do you have a passion that's unrelated to filmmaking that we don't know about?
No, I don't have any time for passion, but that's going to change soon. I'm trying to make changes in my work-life balance so that I can pursue more of those things. Mm-hmm. In fact, a new initiative that I'm kicking off that I just tried this past Friday. I took a half day.
Nice.
On Friday, and I got sick. And I was like, oh, there's my sign. Okay, yeah, I'm supposed to just work 24/7. I love work. I'm addicted to it. But but there's that burnout, you know, metric. And you know, when family's there, family is first, you know. And so I don't know. Ask me that next time we do a Q&A. I'll let you know what my passion is then.
I'm also trying to get better at billiards. That's something that I'm trying to get better at. Random thing that I'm trying to get better at.
Okay. I'll teach you some things. Actually, I think last time we played, you might have beat me. So, well, we are due a billiards
game. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I will run it up any day of the week, my friend.
All right. We got to write in. Do you think streaming has lowered the quality of films? Has it affected the consumption of film? Yes and yes. Is my answer to that in short.
Yes and yes.
But I think it's also a good and a bad thing too. Accessibility is awesome. But then it's saturation too, right? Like a lot of you gotta find your provider that is providing good content. Like to me, think about this.
Yeah.
I got behind Netflix, you know, I was like Netflix subscription because like everything they're putting out, I'm like, you know, it's high quality, good storytelling. You know, my wife and I watch a lot of the like murder doc series, you know, docu-series things, episodic. I swear she's going to put me in the backyard one day. So we watch that. But then when you go like, I used to never think of Amazon Prime, dude. I go, Amazon Prime is like, everything's on there. And there's like the quality, there's nobody curating that. Like Netflix is curated. And so, and that's why you go, yeah, I'll pay $15 for Netflix and, you know, Amazon Prime. Oh, it's lumped in with my, you know, Amazon Prime, you know, membership anyways. That's how I've kind of seen it. So it's like, it's cool because it's an accessibility thing, but then you do have to know like, well, I like this show. So how many platforms do you have to have?
Right.
Right. I've got I've got, you know, so many. And then my wife and I the other day were like, are we watching anything on Hulu? And when is the last time we watched something on Hulu?
Yeah.
And we go, why do we still have this app? And then you know, it's like the algorithm hears you and starts serving you ads. And you're like,
right.
Oh, I didn't know, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine's on there. I don't know. Some show, you know, and you're like, yeah. So then you go and you keep your sub for, you know, a whole nother 3 years.
Right.
And you use it twice.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. I would say in thinking about that, in short, I agree. Yes and yes. And I'll leave it at that. Okay. We got two left.
I love this.
Shane, what inspired you to pursue filmmaking?
Oh, I love the next one that I have for you. You haven't
Maybe.
Yet.
Oh, maybe. Okay, good. Yeah. I have two more for you.
Oh, what inspired you to pursue filmmaking? Oh, I don't know. I'm 40, bro. I can't remember that far back. No, I'm just kidding. I think it was, I really think the love of cinema in my family was a big starter of that. Like my dad, I remember like sneaking it, you know, my dad and I watching like a war movie while my mom was at a conference or doing something, right? And that was like, he just appreciated like good action movies. And we got to experience that together. Yeah. And then on my mom, and then we watched, you know, musicals. We watched all the classic films, dude. I had a classic film education growing up. And I missed a lot of the, you know, the modern 90s movies because, you know, maybe they had thought like, all right, we don't want to show our kids this. So then I had to like catch up on my 90s, you know, later in life. Anyways, homeschool life again.
There you go.
But I think also what impacted me was my mom was capturing everything. They were the family with the video, you know.
My mom was the same way.
Yeah. It must have been that generation of, because it was accessible, right?
Right.
Like before it was film, it's harder. Then it was like, you know, they started to get VHS.
Camcorders
or,
and stuff. Yeah.
It was the big things they'd carry around, all this stuff. And so I just see her documenting life so much. And I thought that was really, and then you watched yourself too. Like sometimes you'd watch the home movies and, you know, and, oh, let's, you know, let's watch your last birthday, and you know, you'd have that moment. I think I saw the joy that brought, not only my family or other people, like, you know, my mom would do it for a friend's, you know, birthday or something. She would, you know, maybe get some footage or photos, right, and share photos for them. So I think that kind of got me interested into like just the idea of capturing and creating. And then later, I think when I, you know, I started investing and buying my own stuff. So I bought like the Canon XL1S and stuff. And I wanted to create content that brought other people entertainment and joy, right? Mm. And so you're kind of like, oh, how can I capture like real life moments and stories? And then it was like, how can I create a cool like short film about, you know, a horror film that happened, or like an action film with your buddies in the backyard, you know? And there's got to be some stuff on some tapes laying around somewhere that I should really like cut into a film. Should be fun to go back through. But yeah, I think that's was the initial, like if I had to go all the way back to like the very basic beginning roots, that was probably the beginning of the pursuit of filmmaking.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Very fascinating, for sure.
All right, Joey, spit your poetry.
Oh man.
To be continued in part 2.